Yeah, well, the title refers to, you know, in the book, I go back to these other moments in history when some technology came along that just dramatically changed everyday life, just like today. So one of those moments is Shakespeare's time. And as it happens, in Shakespeare's lifetime, there was a new gadget that came along that everybody had to have. It was incredibly popular, and it was called a table, or tables. And it was a little almanac you carried around in your pocket that had an erasable surface. You wrote on it with a stylus, and then you could erase it in the evening, all your to-do lists and so forth. Amazingly useful, and the idea of erasing something was brand new to Renaissance society. So Shakespeare gives one to Hamlet in the play Hamlet, when Hamlet meets the ghost for the first time of his father, and the ghost has this terrible news for him. He's so flummoxed by the news that he says, "My tables, my tables," and he pulls out this device from his pocket and begins to write on it. And that's the moment where that I plugged into, so if you will, as really analogous to our own time, where we're dependent on these devices, both in a good way, they can help us get through the day, but also in our case, in a bad way. I think we've become a little too dependent on them.
And that's the crux of the book that I took away from, is that, and you write about it, when you talk to people these days, and you say, "How you doing?" And everyone says, "Well, oh, I'm just so busy."
Yeah.
And that's almost become, instead of saying, "I'm fine, how are you?" People now, the reflex is you say, "I'm busy." And it's in part because of these devices, which, as you say, have connected us in a lot of ways, but almost we're slaves to them now.
Yeah, that's really kind of one of the points of the book, and the reason I wrote it is that we adopted these devices because they do so many wonderful things for us, which is undeniable. And the goal is to make life better and more efficient and more streamlined. And in many ways, they can do that and do that.
And I got to say, one of my favorite parts of the book is right at the beginning. So if people buy the book, read the very first chapter. You talk about your mother.
Yes, my mother. And this idea that, you know, that I can press one button on my phone and connect to my mother across the miles and have a picture of her come up on the phone and have a great conversation, I think that's a miracle.
And even beyond that, I mean, yes, and you were able to tell your mom that you were running behind, which, you know, even 5 years ago, you'd have to pull over, fumble for change or a card or something.
Yeah.
And all that much more efficient. But you also talked about, after you had this conversation with your mom saying, "I'm late," you thought about, "Oh, my mom, I get to spend time with her," all those kinds of things that are wrapped up. Those are all the good side.
Yeah, the good side is the connectedness, but it only happens, the reason I told that story is that the best part of that connection to my mother, when I called her from the car, and that was legal in Massachusetts when I did it, by the way, the only reason all of that happened and I had this wonderful experience of thinking about my mom that I describe is that I hung up the phone and didn't make another call, didn't move on to another digital task. So the moral of that story is you have to open up some gaps between yourself and all your digital tasks, or else they never amount to anything.
In our house, we call it white space, that you need some white space. It's almost part of the creative process. If if you're a thinky person, some of this stuff has to have time to soak in and ferment to some degree.
Yes. We all need, I love that, white space. That's terrific. I haven't heard that one. Yeah, I think that people who do creative tasks for a living, like writers and artists and composers, actually know this intuitively. But what's interesting is it applies to everybody. I mean, an office worker sitting in a cubicle, if they're spending all day toggling between digital tasks, they're not having any of that white space, and they're not being as creative or contributing as much to the organization as they should. And odds are they're being made miserable by their screen.
And going again to this Hamlet's BlackBerry, this isn't, we all think, oh, this is brand new to our generation because we have these marvelous devices. This is not true. I mean,
no.
And you walk through, going back to Plato, for goodness sakes, this evolution of technology has been something that's happened for over a long period of time.
Yeah, I mean, technology changes life in ways that are relative. You know, if you started your life with no books in it, if printed books didn't exist, as in the early 15th century, and suddenly books arrive, that is a major shift in everyday life, in the amount of information you have to navigate. We think of books today as being not very stressful. You know, we think of them as restful. But when they first arrived, they were a new gadget that people really had to figure out how to deal with. And it was overwhelming sometimes. So I look at seven moments like that, and I'm trying to show the reader we've been through this before. We can get through this and make the most of these technologies. We just have to be a little smarter about it.
So is it your sense that these things are relative relatively new, and so we're in that period where we're almost wowed by their newness.
Yes.
And eventually it settles in. That was my take. As you look over time, we get so excited about, hey, we can do this, and instead of thinking, okay, do we need to do this?
Exactly. That's really well put. The point is, we're in the early years of the digital age, and understandably, we've had great enthusiasm for these devices. They're miraculous. I mean, let's face it, it makes perfect sense that we've adopted them so eagerly. But as always happens at moments like this, there's a point that arrives where people step back and say, wait a minute, I want to be smart about how I use these devices. I don't want to become a slave to them. I don't want to have them make my life more complicated, which is what's happened to a lot of us. So I think it's just a question of stepping back. I'm trying to raise consciousness in the book about the idea of balance, just striking a better balance between the screen world and the rest of our lives.
Well, and it's funny, and you see people, my dad's one of these people who, if the phone rings, he has to answer it.
Yeah.
Whether it's we can be at dinner, he loves, adores movies. There's nothing, and he has to answer in the middle of the movie theater, which, yeah, given he's a little hard of hearing, makes a lot of people really upset.
Right.
It's almost interesting how our lives are all of a sudden dictated by these devices.
Yeah, we're doing the same thing. I mean, this idea that you have to go check your iPhone or your computer 15 times on a Saturday when you're not even working to see the inbox, what's in the inbox. I mean, that's crazy. You know, that's no way to spend your day, really, particularly if you're with your family, if you're trying to have quality time with loved ones. It just introduces all these breaks in your real connectedness, the best kind of connectedness, that aren't helpful.
Now, of course, what everyone says is, yes, but I multitask. And we've seen studies that show that what multitasking means is you do all of them less well.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a solution, is it?
No, multitasking is a myth. You know, the human mind is only good at doing one or two things at most at the same time. And sometimes even the two, we don't do it well. As we all know, we know this from experience. But we're constantly trying to convince ourselves that we can multitask effectively. And there is no study that has ever shown conclusively that that's the case. It just doesn't work.
So now we're all depressed and thinking, oh my goodness, we're stuck in this busy phase. Give us fixing this just discipline? Is it just saying, okay, I'm going to put the device away for a little while?
Well, it's discipline, but before discipline comes a change of heart. You have to really be convinced that it's worth changing. You have to realize that your life is going to be better because you're giving up some screen time. You know, it's hard to wean yourself away from a habit. This is a habit for many of us, and it's hard to break a habit. For me, it's very much like sugar. I'm a bit of a sugar addict, and when I've had a period of being on sugar for a few weeks and having desserts every day, it's hard to step away from that. But when I do, the benefits are enormous, and it's the same with our gadgets. It just means realizing I'm going to have a better life if I strike a better balance.
You're not supposed to have desserts every day?
Well, I'm not. Some people can handle it.
I can't really either, but that hasn't stopped me. This is my problem. And you walk through in the book a couple of the ways to do this, and part of it, as you say, is that mindset. And yet, it's so much, I mean, I'm with this business where everything depends on the minute and it's so competitive, it almost is this time period where we're in, where if an email sits there for 15 minutes, people start sending you a follow-up email and saying, hold on, did you not get my email?
Yeah, yeah.
Texting you, even worse.
Yeah, you get caught up in this rhythm that everybody else is in, and you kind of convince yourself, and sometimes, frankly, your superiors at work convince you that if you don't stay in that rhythm, you're going to be in trouble, you know? And companies that are running their offices that way are discovering it's not a really wise way to do things, because they're beginning to see in the bottom line, employees who can't focus are not productive employees. So what you have to do is recognize, and I give examples in the book, there are all kinds of situations in life when you actually don't have to follow the dictates of the screen or of this rhythm that everybody else is following. If you're just a little bit more thoughtful, you can open up these gaps that introduce all kinds of just sort of tranquility and peace to your thinking that I think is necessary to a happy life.
I should mention, we're talking to William Powers. He is author of the book Hamlet's Blackberry, Practical Philosophy for Building a Good Life in the Digital Age. It seems like part of this is that almost our own almost insecurities that if we're not connected, we're going to be left out.
Yeah, I think there is an emotional slash almost automatic belief that we have, a kind of a fear of being left out of what's happening around us and, you know, not being noticed. You know, we want our existence to be confirmed a lot because we're kind of worried, who am I? You know, what's the point of life? All these things, these philosophical questions that occur to us through the day. The screen really reminds us that we exist, and that can be a good thing. But if you're reaching out all the time for what I call the digital crowd to confirm to you that you matter, you're really leaving behind this important part of life that philosophers have written about for ages, the idea of self-reliance, you know, having your own sort of good, solid inner life that you can rely on. And I think that is so crucial to just moving through the day happily.
And it seems like so often, the as you say, the whole organizational structure is just built on this focus.
Yes.
So do you find that folks start off, what are good first steps? Is it, do you set off maybe a Saturday and say, okay, for a Saturday, I'm only going to check it once in the morning and once at night? Or how do you start?
Well, I try in the book not to be prescriptive, not to tell people how they should do it, because every life is different. But I do give examples from my own life and from organizations, things that have been tried successfully. So that's a great idea, what you just mentioned, is start with your free time, because that's the time that obviously you can shape completely. So say to yourself, you know, if Saturday is your day off from work, say, okay, this is my day off from work. I'm going to see what it's like to go, you know, you could begin with, I'm going to go till dinner time without checking the screen at all, with having my iPhone turned off, whatever. Of course, having the iPhone turned off is tricky because it's both a mobile phone and an inbox.
Right.
So that makes it more complicated. I've never moved to the smartphone because I don't want to have my inbox with me all the time. Some people have no choice. But in any case, you have to design your own regimen and figure out a way where you can work some of these gaps into your life. And if it works with your free time on the weekends, you can start trying to do it at work. I mean, a half hour away from the screen in the cubicle can work wonders. This has already been shown in workplaces. Technology companies are actually leading the way in these experiments because they have the most connected employees of all.
And let's finish up talking about the benefits of doing this, because
yes,
there's been a lot of research, a lot of books out there about how even at the most rote job, increasingly the creativity that you bring to that is almost the most important thing that you can add to whatever you're doing.
Exactly. You know, if you look at the business book shelves in the bookstores, you know, you see all these books using the right side of your brain, which is the creative side, thinking outside the box. You know, it's all about, let's face it, we live in a market society. It's all about innovation, you know, being the first individual or organization to come to a fresh idea and selling it. Well, you're never going to get to that fresh idea if you're constantly hostage to the screen and can never get in that slower, more creative way of thinking that leads to the best ideas. And so organizations are discovering that particularly people that have these jobs that require creativity, you have to give them some of that, what you call very nicely, white space.
Yeah.
They need that space in which to allow their thoughts to go where they want to go. You know, the brain is a wonderful device. It has this incredible ability to make new connections, new associations, but it needs time and space to do that.
As you were writing and researching the book, was there one thing that was either an aha moment or something that you know, I imagine writing this thing, there have to be moments where you go, oh my goodness, I just had no idea.
Yes, there was one moment, I write about it in the book. I have a boat that we use in the summer. My family has a small motorboat, and I was out on the boat one day by myself, and I, in a very ridiculous Three Stooges kind of moment, I fell out of the boat, fully clothed, with my mobile phone in my pocket. And when I climbed back in and rescued myself, I also tried to rescue the phone, but it had drowned. The phone was dead.
And you've seen a lot of studies where people say they'd rather lose their wallet than their smartphone these days.
Yeah, and I was really angry at myself, and I started to think of all the frustrating things I was going to have to do, buy a new phone, a new contract, recover my list of email addresses, all that stuff. But after about 5 minutes, I had this amazing dawning realization that for the first time in ages, I was unreachable. Nobody could reach me, and I couldn't reach out and get them, touch them for confirmation, all these things we've been talking about, and it felt wonderful. And I realized this was a state that I had treasured years ago and realized was central to my life and my happiness. And I'd given it up without even thinking about it. So that was one of those moments in working on the book when I realized I want to share this with people as a writer, because I think it hasn't dawned on a lot of people that we've lost this valuable asset.
And I got to say, I think that's one of the most remarkable things while I was reading your book was how this has almost been done without anybody making a decision about it. It's just happened. You know, usually we like to think of ourselves as controlling our lives and giving our lives some direction. Well, we haven't chosen this. It's just, as you say, happened.
But, you know, the good news is that it's always this way with human beings. We get excited about a new technology. In the 19th century, when the telegraph first appeared, people got this idea they had to check the telegraph all day long. Even businessmen were leaving the family dinner table to check the telegraph traffic, exactly the same as today. And then people step back and realize, this is no way to live. This isn't helping me get anything done. And they developed a better way. So I think we're in the process of that. And I'm hoping my book will be part of the sort of new understanding of how to live well and productively with these devices.
Well, why don't you give a couple tips, you know, because I think this can, I can hear people already as they're listening to this going, I can't be without my device.
Yeah, great. So there are a number of ways that I talk about in the book, very practical ways that people can actually put these ideas into practice, this idea of opening up gaps in your connected life. A simple one is when you're traveling. Travel is an unusual opportunity to be away from your connected life, because you do sometimes move through these zones when it's harder to get a connection, like when you arrive at an airport.
Yeah.
And you have to go through some crazy rigmarole to get on the airport's Wi-Fi system. I have this in Boston at Logan Airport near where I live. Why go through it? Why not take that opportunity to actually be disconnected for a little while and reap the benefits? The same thing on the airplane. You don't have to sign up for and pay for the wireless service to have it on your flight. Why not have the flight be a little time away from your screen life? More ambitiously, my family has been doing something that I write about in the book. We're in the fourth year now of this, where we unplug our household modem on the weekend. We pull the plug Friday before bedtime, and we don't plug it back in again until Monday morning, so we spend the whole weekend offline. My wife and I started this because we felt that we were sort of being pulled away from each other as a family. We have a son who was 9 years old at the time, and we felt like we wanted to spend more quality time together and not be dominated by our screens, and it has been amazing. Those 2 days off a week have just revolutionized our lives together. So, you know, that might not be a solution that everyone could put into effect in their lives, but things like that, even the smallest little attempt to shift the balance a bit, can make a huge difference.
And by and large, it sounds, I mean, if I were doing this, I'll try some of it, start with your personal life, because that's, again, where you have more control.
Yes, you have to start with you don't have to, but I think the wisest way to start is with your personal life and your free time, where you have the most freedom to reconfigure how you spend your time and how you use your devices. So, again, you know, the simple idea of let me go for 2 hours and not check my iPhone, see how that feels, even have it turned off during your free time. See what that does for your life. There's a little period of withdrawal that can be very difficult. My family went through this when we started trying to do these experiments. But after you move through that, as with a diet, once you kind of get used to the diet, you begin to feel much better and you realize it's really helping you. Same thing with the digital diet, if you can call it that. You begin to realize, hey, I'm moving into a mode, a way of thinking, a mood that really feels good. I'm glad I did this.
So I got to go to the Galapagos Islands earlier this year, mm-hmm. and it's a place where, shockingly enough, the sea iguanas, they don't really care about being connected to the rest of the world. They're
right.
just doing their thing,
right.
and that's their role in the planet. And for me, so I knew I was going to be disconnected for a big chunk of time.
Right.
And for me, the almost the anticipation of being disconnected was the hard part. Once I was actually there and got into the moment and enjoying reading books and enjoying these amazing animals and this amazing geography, then I was fine. But the preparation of getting there and thinking, I'm going to be without my device for this period of time, that was the hard part for me.
Yeah, you know, there's this, amazingly enough, there we've got this fear now of being disconnected, the belief that really you can't even go for a walk around the block without your device or else something bad might happen to you. But think about it, how long human beings have been walking the earth without smartphones.
Yeah, right.
And how well most of them have done for all those ages. You know, you don't need that device to get through the day, you know, and nothing bad is going to happen if you spend half a day without it. And that's the kind of the gauntlet that you have to pass through. And once you do, as you discovered in the Galapagos, you realize, hey, this isn't just fun. It's actually really easy. You know, it's not the ordeal I thought it would be. It's wonderful.
And it can be very worthwhile, both personally and I think in business as well. It causes you to think you need that time. If you're going to think outside the box, to use the horrible phrase,
yeah,
you need time to think about how you're going to go about doing that.
Yeah, I mean, it leads your mind down these creative, really, lanes and pathways and avenues that you didn't even know existed. You know those eureka moments when you have that thought that you've never had before, and maybe you think, maybe I'm the only one that's ever had this thought before, something that feels really fresh. Those are the moments when these things come to us. Why on earth would we want to give up these opportunities to have that kind of thinking? It's human beings at their best.